couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Ben is Back, Vox Lux, Mowgli, The Legend of the Jungle, Dumplin', and Divide and Conquer, The Rise and Fall of Roger Ailes. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Mission Impossible Fallout. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first news that I really want to talk about is the Golden Globe nominations, which came out on Thursday. And as much as everybody else notices, I recognize that the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is a small little nothing group that is, what, about 100 members, and I don't even know what it takes to get in there. But they tend to be a good precursor to the Oscars. This is the real first big award show that gives the nominations out. Of course, we got Critics' Choice coming up next weekend, the nominations, which I vote in. And then, of course, the Oscars come after the new year. But I've been saying this for a while. There's no real front runner. There is no film that like gobbled up like 10 nominations. I think the most was Vice, which got 6, which is a good number of nominations. And even like Green Book and A Star is Born each got 5, like when you throw in like soundtrack issues. But none of them were getting the double digit award nominations. And I love the fact that Can You Ever Forgive Me? You got Richard E. Grant getting a Best Supporting Actor nomination. But I think there's some other takeaways that we have. What's interesting is both Bohemian Rhapsody and A Star is Born were nominated for Best Picture in the drama category, which kind of is surprising because those are both essentially musicals. They're not musicals in the Busby Berkeley sense, but they're certainly musical films. They're musical dramas. And the fact that they put them in the dramatic category means that they give it a more respect. The musical and comedy category is kind of a throwaway category for the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. And I don't know why they still break that out. They should just do Best Picture, yes or no. Because they do Best Director as just the single person. Speaking of Best Director, those 5 films that got Best Director nominations in the Golden Globes, A Star is Born, Roma, Green Book, BlacKkKlansman, and Vice. I think that's a good bead on what you're going to see at the Oscars and other award shows. Those seem to be the ones that are bubbling up to the top. What's interesting is for the past several years, there have been a lot of criticisms of lack of diversity in your award shows. But this one, it was actually a great show for diverse artists. I mean, Black Panther got a nomination for Best Picture and, of course, some soundtrack stuff. It didn't get Best Director or any acting awards, but it got a nomination for Best Picture, and that's a big deal because that's one of the biggest grossing movies of 2018. Also, BlacKkKlansman, Spike Lee's best film since Malcolm X, and If Beale Street Could Talk, the new film by Barry Jenkins. Crazy Rich Asians got a couple nominations. It is a good year for diversity in the Golden Globes. And even on that note, you also had Roma getting some traction. And like Mudbound last year and Beasts of No Nation like 3 years ago, Roma is a Netflix release that they're really pushing. And this actually is the one that I think is going to push it over the edge. Mudbound didn't perform as well last year in the final voting, but I think Roma is up there in terms of the one to beat, being, and it's also a diverse film. It takes place in Mexico. It's in Spanish and native language, and it's, directed by a Mexican expatriate. In terms of snubs, I'd say that the big ones I think people are talking about are Widows and First Reformed and The Hate U Give. All people feel that they got snubbed. Ryan Gosling didn't get anything for First Man. I think that it's just First Man kind of just lost some traction. That's the danger of releasing something in September or even October. And then A Quiet Place, ironically, got Score for a movie with such a title. Now, what's interesting, dovetailing this discussion from the Golden Globes into the Oscars, Kevin Hart has pulled a Scaramucci and has the shortest lived career as an Oscar host. He basically was the Oscar host for like 2 days. He wasn't even writing the jokes yet. And he has already bowed out. And this is because these tweets got resurfaced that were homophobic tweets, that were anti-gay tweets. And then some of them are pretty caustic. Now, I'm all for people saying, look, you know, you did that 10 years ago or whatever. You apologize, get over it, change. That was the base of my whole support of James Gunn, saying, hey, he did that years ago and he's changed his behavior and he's not done it since. The thing with Kevin Hart is, first of all, he said he wasn't going to apologize. And there's a certain, don't just apologize, and that doesn't always make it better. It certainly didn't work for Roseanne. But I think it was probably a smart PR move for Kevin Hart to just bow out, because this was not going to end well for him. There's nothing you can do, because the other problem was it wasn't just these tweets. You can go back and watch Get Hard, which is a movie he did with Will Ferrell, which had some arguably homophobic issues in it. There was also his live show, Kevin Hart, What Now?, which has some homophobic stuff in the comedy set. So this is not an isolated incident for Kevin Hart. And I think it makes a difference because it's the Oscars. If it was the Super Bowl, I don't think it would have made as much of a difference, because the gay community is not into the Super Bowl. The gay community is certainly into the Oscars. I have a gay friend who tweeted out, he's like, who do you think watches the Oscars? But here's the thing that people complain, oh, the people are too sensitive and you should just get over it, deal with it. My rule is, if you have either, you know, policy or law or jokes that target a certain group of people, you got to listen to what those people say, whether or not it's good. Do not ask the straight guy if the homophobic comments offend him, because they can say, oh, it doesn't bother me. Ask the gay people. If gay people are offended by it or take issue with it, then maybe it's homophobic. If you have a racially insensitive joke, don't ask the white guy if they think it's okay. Ask the black people, say, is this going too far? I think what needs to happen now is there needs to be a consultant company. This is a great idea for a business, by the way. You need to just have a consultant company that only does online vetting. And what they do is, if you're ever going to get an Oscar host or a movie director or somebody who's going to run a TV show or be on a family sitcom, you can fully vet their social media. Set that up. You're going to make a lot of money. I'll get the check in the mail when it goes through. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. No, I'm not going to talk about the Avengers. I'm sorry. I am not watching those trailers every year. There's a movie or two that I want to avoid like the plague, because trailers are so spoilery. One that is Avenger related, it's Avengers adjacent. Let's look at the new Captain Marvel trailer.
Would you like to know what you really are?
I think I had a life here.
What aren't you telling me?
You've come a long way, but you're not as strong as you think. This war is just the beginning.
I'm not gonna fight your war. I'm gonna end it.
This opens on March 8th, and I'm getting more excited about this. This looks like it's gonna be one heck of a movie. I think Brie Larson, I think she's a good enough actor. I don't think you see much of her performance in this. I think she's sort of dull in the trailer, but I'm hoping that there's going to be a little more meat in the non-action scenes. But this looks really cool. I'm looking forward to this one. This looks like it's really going outside of the box and can be a fun superhero movie for a character that nobody knows anything about. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Happy Death Day to You, which opens on February 14th.
A day reset when you died. Right?
Yeah.
I might be able to help with that. I died 11 times.
I was stuck reliving the same day over and over again until someone wearing a baby mask murdered me on the night of my birthday. I thought it ended the loop, but I'm back. Oh my God. Everything's different. This time, it's coming after all of us.
If you don't reset the day and try again, they're dead for good, aren't they?
So I'm gonna have to die over and over again to save all of you.
I thought the first Happy Death Day was a lot of fun. This one looks like it's going to be equally a lot of fun. And I like the fact that they're still spinning off and enjoying the silliness. And there's a wink and a nod to the audience that this movie is a gimmick. Now I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about new films for Netflix, which include Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle, and Dumplin'.
look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. This week there's no new movies. There's no new wide releases. Whatever's out there last week is what you're stuck with in the theaters this week. Oh, there's one. They're releasing Schindler's List. They're re-releasing that in the theaters because it's the 25th anniversary, and it's like in 1,000 or so theaters. And that's a great movie. I absolutely love Schindler's List. It's a powerful, impactful, relevant, great, well-done movie. With that said, I don't particularly want to see it again because it's harrowing and tough to get through. It is a depressing and hard movie to make it through, but it's a brilliant film. So if you've never seen Schindler's List, now's your chance to see it on the big screen. It's definitely worth seeing. Like I said, I just have trouble wanting to watch it again because, it's a tough ride. But other than that, I'm going to be talking about a couple releases in the next segment, and those are limited ones. So they're going to get buried in the next couple weeks, which is why I'm going to talk about them this week. But right now, the big releases this week, it seems to be a bigger release on Netflix. Netflix is really throwing down behind their original movies, and they're trying to become a content creator specifically rather than somebody who just libraries the other content from other studios. The first one I want to hit is Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle, drops this weekend on Netflix. Andy Serkis directs his live-action CGI adaptation of Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book.
Bagheera, why am I different?
You are special, little brother.
You've got hands, so let's use them. Stop!
Out of my way!
I shouldn't let them pick on me like that.
Wolves are supposed to be with other wolves.
He's not a wolf!
I've seen the way you look at the village. Mowgli, you are one of them.
I know that Jon Favreau directed the CGI version of The Jungle Book a couple years ago, and this was originally supposed to come out around that time, but I think they wisely decided not to give it a theatrical release, move it to Netflix, and that way it wouldn't compete too much. Now, there's no way to watch this movie and talk about it without comparing it not just to The Jungle Book movie that Jon Favreau did a couple years ago, but to the original animated Jungle Book from Disney, because that's what most people know when they see The Jungle Book. I've never read The Jungle Book. I've seen the movies. With that said, this is a little bit more of a grown-up version of it. It's still something that I think you could arguably watch with kids, but it's got some violent stuff in it. It's a harder edge to it. And it's a neat alternative take on The Jungle Book. It doesn't have the big song and dance numbers. The animals aren't as cute. I mean, Baloo is a little bit of a harder sell. He's not just this lovable little bear who's singing about the bear necessities. He's still a goofy friend of Mowgli's. But there's some stuff that happens in this movie that I thought if I were watching it with I wouldn't watch it with a little kid because you're going to have the kid in tears. You know, this is kind of a older PG movie. It's not quite PG-13, but I don't just say, hey, it's got fuzzy animals, let's watch it. But in that sense, it's an interesting movie. The special effects aren't as good as the Disney version because I don't think it's as big of a budget. Andy Serkis is best known for playing characters like Gollum and in the Planet of the Apes movies. He's a mocap actor. And in doing this, he's directing CGI characters as well. I saw his movie Breathe last year, which was a live-action movie. It was not a mocap movie at all, and it was about the guy who created the self-propelled wheelchair. That one I wasn't very impressed with. I think it very much felt like a first movie that he was still getting his feet wet. This one feels a little more composed, and I think a lot of this has to be put together in the computer, so there's a lot more leeway once the stuff ends up on film or once it's shot. Still, the Mowgli movie isn't as good as the other Jungle Book films, partly because you're conditioned to want to see that other stuff. Like when the humans show up in this movie, it kind of takes a different turn and it's not as good. Its strengths is in the beginning when it's Mowgli with the jungle animals. And they do have some interesting stuff, and they make some interesting choices. But it's essentially, it's a Tarzan movie. That's what the Jungle Book is. It's Tarzan. It's an Indian version of Tarzan. But still, I'm going to have to say, if you got Netflix, check this one out. It's an interesting movie. Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Dumplin'. Danielle McDonald stars as an overweight daughter of a beauty queen who decides to enter a local pageant as a protest.
My name is Willadane Dixon.
Hey, Willadane.
Hoppo.
Tumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen.
Most people call me Will, except for my mom, who calls me...
Dumplin', I can't be late. This cannot exactly drive itself.
Being a bit of a celebrity around here meant that she was too busy for me.
And that's when I decided enough was enough.
I know that look. What's going on?
I think I'm going to sign up for the pageant.
It's going to be like a protest in heels.
Danielle McDonald is most recognizable to a lot of people from being in the movie Patty Cakes, where she was the rapper. And she was great in that movie. She's kind of what made that movie work. The movie itself, I wasn't a big fan of, but I liked her in it. She is what makes this movie work. Jennifer Aniston plays her mom, and I think Jennifer Aniston does a fine job. It's just that's not where the meat of the movie is. The meat of the movie is with this character. Now, it's based on a young adult book, and it's, you know, like I said, it deals with body issues and self-esteem and self-worth and a lot of stuff that is a very typical young adult material. And I'll tell you, I got a screener for this because it's an award season push, and it actually got a nomination for song in the Golden Globes. I got the screener, and I looked at it, I go, oh, God, this thing looks awful. Sometimes you get these screeners come across your desk, and you're just like, oh, I don't want to watch this. This looks terrible. And so I was dragging my feet. And then finally I watched it, and you know, doggone it, if this thing just didn't capture my heart. It's predictable. It's cliche. It's corny at times, but you know what's really effectively done? It's a sweet little movie. And Danielle McDonald certainly carries it. She does a great job in the movie. And even with Jennifer Aniston, who's by far not my favorite, and I think she's the best when she's like a villain, and she's not really a villain in this one. She's basically a woman who won the beauty contest when she was younger and has never left the beauty contest. And she has a crappy job where she works at a nursing home, but her little claim to fame in this small Texas town is that she is a beauty queen royalty, basically. And she didn't have a daughter who necessarily fit in those footsteps. I think this manages to point out the problems with beauty pageants while being sensitive to the people who do them as well. It sort of reminds me a little bit of Miss Congeniality, that movie with Sandra Bullock, where she had a pose as a beauty queen. This is it's a sweet movie, and its heart's in the right place. Like I said, it's predictable and it's corny, but doggone it, if it's not a charming little film. And I think it's something that like a family with teenagers could watch on Netflix. Like I said, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this one. So I'm going to have to say that Dumplin', much to my surprise, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the limited release films Ben Is Back and Vox Lux. Back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. Now, these are new movies. They're opening like in four or five theaters in like New York and LA. So for most people who are listening to this around the country, these you can't go to the theater and see these yet. You may be able to go see in a couple weeks, but also in a couple weeks, there's going to be a deluge of movies. So I want to get these out now and talk about them while they're in technically in release. And then if you want to check them out later, you can. The first one is Ben Is Back. Julia Roberts stars as a mother whose son returns from rehab on Christmas Eve and throws the family into turmoil.
Did you see? He's gained some weight and he's got the sparkle back in his eyes. He's clearly doing better.
Well, then why are you hiding everything?
We said we weren't going to do this again, remember?
I agree. And if it weren't Christmas.
You get a day. This time tomorrow, you are back in sober living.
Holy! Oh my God!
I put my family in danger.
This is on you.
If I don't deal with this, then it could be worse next time.
First of all, it's very difficult to talk about this movie without comparing it to Beautiful Boy. Because they are both essentially wrestling with the same material. It's about a parent trying to deal with their child's addiction. Whereas in Beautiful Boy, it's a true story and Steve Carell plays the parent trying to help his son and ultimately realizing that at times you can't help him if he doesn't want the help. In this one, Julia Roberts plays the mom and her son comes home from rehab. Now, the difference between this and Beautiful Boy, the big difference is Beautiful Boy is based on a real life true story. And I'm sure there are some dramatic liberties taken, but this one is a manufactured story. I mean, it's a story about real issues, which is about chemical dependencies and how, what causes them to get there and what's been problematic in the past and what can be done and what can't be done. While I'm not a big fan of the based on a true story moniker, if it's a true story, even if it's a little contrived, that's okay because sometimes the truth is contrived. When you write a story and you kind of create it out of the ether, when it has moments that are contrived, that just kind of counts as a strike against the film. And that was what I felt at times with Ben Is Back. There's parts of the movie that I thought, oh, that doesn't seem natural. That doesn't seem like it could happen, or it happens in a very safe, creative environment. It's sort of like, to use a weird example, if you remember that movie Outbreak about 25 years ago with Dustin Hoffman and Rene Russo, where they were fighting an Ebola-type virus. If you compare that movie to Contagion, which is the Steven Soderbergh film about a super virus that starts to kill people, the Soderbergh film, even though they're both contrived, the Soderbergh film felt like it had much more of a basis in reality. It felt much more like it was really could happen, whereas that movie Outbreak, it kind of goes off the rails and becomes a Hollywood picture at the end where it doesn't feel real. It maybe works for the dramatic moments, but it doesn't feel as real. And I felt that way with Ben Is Back, that there's parts of it that I said, well, that feels like it's something that was created in a writer's mind rather than being pulled from the headlines, so to speak. And I guess that's an unfair comparison. And that's an unfair thing to say, but I couldn't help but I couldn't escape that feeling. I mean, the performances are good. Julia Roberts does a great job in the role. And Lucas Hedges, who's also in Boy Erased this year, and he got a nomination for Manchester by the Sea a couple years ago, he does a fine job in the film as Ben, you know, the addict. What this movie also doesn't do is it tries to address how he got addicted to pills. But it just sort of swerves into that and kind of sideswipes it and then runs away from that issue. My thought was either deal with it head on and make it part of the story or don't. It just, there's a throwaway moment where it feels like it's biting off a little more than they can chew in this movie. So, I mean, in the end, this is a fine family drama, but it just seemed a lesser film after Beautiful Boy because Beautiful Boy is so stark and impactful and real because that's what happens. And it's not a neat movie. It doesn't tie things up. Beautiful Boy doesn't, but that's kind of the reality of life. And this one, I don't know. There are times that it just felt like it's trying to deal with a real issue that is plaguing the country. And it also shows that it's like Beautiful Boy. It's not something that just happens in the slums or in the bad neighborhoods. It happens to everybody. It does kind of falter, especially near the end when they're trying to wrap it up from a story perspective. I will say that Ben Is Back kind of rocks because it's worth seeing.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about Vox Lux right now. Natalie Portman stars as a pop star whose troubled past continues to cause problems in her personal life.
It's a weird world we live in.
and the way I've chosen to live my life. Please don't follow me. It goes against some people's views on things.
Do you mind if I get a quick picture with you?
Mom, I'm worried about you.
You're worried about me?
I'm scared.
This film has a very interesting start. It starts off right before the turn of the century, where there's a school shooting. And that's topical. And as that scene plays out, which is kind of hard to watch, when that scene plays out, it did make me realize that you're probably going to get a couple more school shooting movies coming up in the next couple of years, because that's certainly in the general national discussion. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see these kind of movies start showing up. And I was interested in how they were handling it, because it's a story about this kid that survives it and how she deals with the grief and how she channels it into doing some music. But then it abandons that, which was, like I said, it was a difficult watch part of the movie, but it was interesting at least, and dealing with stuff that I don't think has been put onto screen quite yet. And then it turns into her becoming a pop star. And then that movie goes completely off the rails and turns into absolute hot garbage. Because then it becomes a movie about navigating the music world and the pop music world. And you bring in Jude Law as the producer or the manager who's trying to help them get through the music industry, and then goes ahead in time to where Natalie Portman's the star. And a lot of it is just, it's just her being an absolute hot mess of a person, and not even in A Star Is Born kind of way. I mean, A Star Is Born was a movie that does show the pitfalls of being a famous person when you have a lot of adoration and money thrown at you and the means to really live a decadent lifestyle, but it can also show the downside to that. I thought The Star Is Born at least managed that. It's not my kind of movie, but this one is just almost narcissistic in that approach. And does Natalie Portman do a good job acting? Yeah, absolutely. But it's, you know, it reminds me, I was once on a jury, a murder trial, and they were going to put the guy on the stand who was accused, and everyone's waiting for the big Hollywood moment where he's going to say things, either exonerate himself or, you know, make himself look more guilty. And then the guy takes a stand, and he was just a horrible witness. He was kind of incompetent and incoherent, and he barely answered the question. It was the most anticlimactic thing, because we've been trained to see something happen like that on screen. And it was kind of disappointing, because he didn't make a good witness. And I feel like that's with this movie, where you're like, oh, it's in this contrived format where, you know, you can put this great actress and give her some great words on a script to have her say, and you can have real zingers and dissect the nature of celebrity and how the entertainment press views them and uses them. And you could really put that together. But then she just goes out there and just kind of farts out of her mouth. And that's basically what the movie is. It's pretentious garbage that is masquerading as a music video version of a movie. And it's trying to be significant, and it's trying to be relevant, and it's trying to show the struggle that celebrities have, but I have no sympathy for them. And artistically and creatively, it's vacuous and really just unappealing. So I'm going to have to say that Vox Lux totally sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Divide and Conquer, The Rise and Fall of Roger Ailes, The Box Office, and The Home Cinema Roundup featuring Mission Impossible Fallout. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's do the final review, which is Divide and Conquer, The Rise and Fall of Roger Ailes. This documentary looks at the rise of Roger Ailes from a television producer to the head of Fox News and his fall from grace amid sexual misconduct allegations.
Roger was invested in creating a myth about who he was. He wanted something like Fox News for years.
Fox News became the number one cable network.
Everybody has an agenda, he used to say.
See what they're after,
and then manipulate them.
He used his talent to build something that drove a wedge.
Gotta get you outraged.
The people running the country, he put them there.
I said, what's next for you? And he said, still have a president to pick.
This certainly seems to be the year for political documentaries. I mean, you had the one with Michael Moore. He did one about Trump and the age of Trump. And you had Dinesh D'Souza do one about the age of Trump. And you had that one, I forget what it was called, but it was this guy who had was trying to figure out what caused people to vote for Trump. And so there's a lot of dissection that's going on in the political documentary realm. These movies tend not to do terribly well, and I think part of the reason for that is now more than ever, we're inundated with political stuff. I'm on the radio. One of the things that's great about my show is that I usually don't talk politics, because you want politics, you can get it anywhere else on the dial. I mean, politics is all over the place on radio. Not many people are talking about movies. Now, sometimes I have to talk about politics because it's part of the movies. But the politics, it's all over the, it's in the TV, it's on the computer, it's on the internet, it's on Facebook, it's on your phone. It's everywhere you turn. So I think these movies, why they are allowing filmmakers to vent a bit and to work through some things, these movies tend not to be big money makers because people get enough politics at this point. You know, it's a lot of these movies tend to be essentially the equivalent of a Facebook argument. This is absolutely not a positive look at Roger Ailes. So know that going in, depending on where you fall on the political spectrum. If you're a big fan of Roger Ailes and how he worked as basically a media consultant for everyone from Nixon through Reagan, and if you are a big fan of Fox News and you haven't, if you watch that all the time, you're probably not going to like some of the things they say, because it does get very critical of Fox News. So just know that going in. But I will say this, I'm going to give this movie credit. It does get different voices in there. I mean, Glenn Beck is one of the big interviewees on this movie. And yeah, he was a never Trumper originally, but he's kind of thrown himself in line behind Trump. But hearing him talk about what it was like on Fox News and his interaction with Roger Ailes, I think that's valuable, because this isn't just a bunch of liberal talking heads. You actually, and they also actually talk to people who worked with Ailes in development of Fox News and some of his other business interests who are allies of him. And I think that works, as opposed to just, you know, like the Michael Moore, Dinesh D'Souza documentaries, where they just come in with a complete political bent. And yes, this is critical of Fox News, and this is critical of developing a conservative news station. And you do kind of have to take that with a grain of salt, because, I mean, they do kind of make it seem almost, yeah, smoky backroom type thing. It has a lot of connective tissue with the movie Vice. When that movie comes out in a couple weeks, it might be an interesting pairing. I watched both of those right next to each other, so they kind of covered similar ground. But what's interesting about it is what Ailes did to build Fox News, and they make it look like he was some draconian individual who had this plan all the way going back to Nixon. I'm sure he had seeds of it. But they even kind of swerve into some things that were not big successes initially on Fox News. It took a while for Fox News to become what it is. And you get to see the progression in there. And that's what I kind of found interesting about this from a nonpartisan view. It also is interesting showing how he came to lose his power and what happened with him and the sexual misconduct allegations. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. I don't care if you're conservative or liberal. That sexual misconduct stuff's pretty awful. I mean, it felt like he, by the way, a lot of these in these firsthand accounts of people seemed like he was the equivalent of Harvey Weinstein, how he was using his power to play around a little bit, play the field, and how he manipulated his stars and some of the people in front of the camera. And the people that we don't even know about. They talk about that in this, that there's a lot of that. And that's, again, that's neither Democrat, Republican. That's not conservative or liberal. You get powerful people, especially, from a gender-oriented thing where you got a powerful man, it's going to wield his power over women. And that happens. That is a man problem. That is not a conservative or liberal problem. And that's, I think, what saves this movie from just kind of spiraling out of control into a liberal diatribe, is that it is looking at the power structure of Fox News and how that became very problematic and how it eventually crumbled and how fast it crumbled. So I'm going to have to say, you know, put your politics aside and check it out because it's interesting. Divide and Conquer, The Rise and Fall of Roger Ailes kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the box office. Last week, it was kind of a repeat from the week before. You know, Ralph Breaks the Internet came in first. The Grinch is pushing back up, you know, because it's right before Christmas. It's a great run for Christmas. It's doing better. I think it was timed better than, and it's a better movie than the Nutcracker movie, which is, you know, that's out of the top 10. But yeah, the Grinch came in and it's cracked over 200 million and, you know, it's doing well in its run. It's probably going to do well through the end of the year. Creed 2 is still doing well. Fantastic Beasts, and that's actually not performing terribly well. Overseas is where it's going to make its money. That's where it's going to be a $1 billion movie. The Possession of Hannah Grace was the only new movie last week, and that came in at number 7 with about $6.5 million. Robin Hood is tanking, and then Green Book actually had a nice hold, just under $4 million, hitting the top 10. So you're going to see a lot of those same films in a lot of those same places this week, because Schindler's List is being re-released in the theaters. I don't think it's going to make that big of a box office impact. And then everything else is essentially what you had last week is what you're stuck with this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Spotlight this week is on Mission Impossible Fallout. The latest Mission Impossible movie sees Tom Cruise trying to stop a terrorist nuclear attack.
Solomon Lane escaped in Paris.
And now the world is at risk.
This is the CIA's mission. You use a scalpel. I prefer a hammer.
This is a bad idea.
Is it ever a good one? Honestly.
He's not just some observer. He's an assassin.
I don't trust anybody outside of this room.
You go rogue, he's been authorized to hunt you down and kill you.
I give a lot of credit to the Mission Impossible movies. These are wildly entertaining. They are incredibly well done, and they are some of the best action movies you're going to see. And I give credit to Tom Cruise. I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan, but I will give credit where credit's due. Tom Cruise makes these movies better because of his dedication to practical stunts. You know, I really don't care whether he's actually hanging off a helicopter or not, but I give him a heck of a lot of props for doing it at his age or any age. But he's doing some incredible stunts, and that's kind of, this is the kind of stuff you can't really fake. I mean, people say, oh, yeah, no, you can make it look good with computers. No, I mean, there's an organic feel to seeing him in these situations that I don't think can quite be manipulated authentically with pixels. And that's what makes these Mission Impossible movies so great. And I hope that there's somebody who takes up that reign as Tom Cruise gets older, that people will start doing the practical stunts. Because, I mean, if you're doing an Avengers movie with laser beams and flying people and everything, that's fine. But if you're getting a real person and putting them on an airplane or a helicopter and hanging them off the edge, do it with a real person. That's impressive. And it looks good. And it makes it worth seeing in the theater. This is one of those movies, one of the few movies every year. There's a handful of them that if you didn't see it in the theater on the big screen, you missed out. This was one that looked fantastic on the big screen. It was worth seeing in large format. Now, if you've got a 4K television and a 4K player, you can get a good version of it, but it's not the same as having an entire wall of the screen. So it's still good on video, still worth seeing, but you miss a little bit when it's not on the big screen. Still, this is a fun movie. This is a fun franchise. These, I wouldn't say they keep getting better, but from 4, which was Ghost Protocol on, these have all been fantastic movies and really some of the best stuff that Tom Cruise has ever done. So I'm going to have to say that Mission Impossible Fallout still totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other releases on DVD and Blu-ray this week include The Nun, Operation Finale, and the TV shows Westworld Season 2 and The Handmaid's Tale Season 2, as well as the Doctor Who Peter Davison years, Season 1 of those. And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, we're going to actually have new movies in the wide release, including Mortal Engines and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, as well as The Mule. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.